Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Jovan, boo-ha! Boo-ha!
Yo, yo! I'm Jovan Buha, NBA reporter and analyst for Buha's Block, and welcome to another episode. On today's show, we are talking internal improvement, whether the Lakers decide to run it back or overhaul the rotation to get to the next level and make a conference finals, a finals, or even win an NBA championship, they are going to need some level of internal improvement. And so I have one category that each player on the roster can improve on. Without further ado, let's get into it. I'm not going to be discussing Maxi Kleba, Dalton Knecht, and Nick Smith Jr. because I don't think they factor into LA's future. But if I had to pick a thing for each of them, for Maxi, it would be getting his three-point shot back. For Dalton, it would be his defense and his processing on both sides of the ball. And with Nick Smith Jr., it would be his defense and his motor. All right, now we're going to start with Luka Doncic. And with Luka, this is more of a nitpick than anything, but my area of improvement for Luka is his shot profile. And we're talking about a minor adjustment here, but I think Luka could stand to improve his shot profile by attempting more shots in the paint and at the rim and fewer shots from deep. And we're talking about a 1-2 shot difference here. I don't think he needs to overhaul his shot selection by any means. If you look at the numbers, Luka shot a career best 83% at the rim this season, yet only 14% of his shots came at the rim, which is continued a multi-year downward trajectory. If you go back to the 2022-23 season, 25% of Luka's shot attempts came at the rim. Since then, 2023-24, it was down to 18%. Last season, it was down to 15% in Dallas, then 19% in LA, and then this season, it is down to 14%. Conversely, you look at his three-point shooting in terms of his three-point rate. There was a big jump between 2022-23 and 2023-24, went from 32% of his shots to 40%. Since then, it has only been increasing. So 40% in 2024. Last year in Dallas, it was at 41%, 42% in LA. This past season in LA, 42%. And so we've seen this shift where he's attempting fewer shots at the rim, more shots from deep. This past season, he averaged a career high in terms of three-point attempts per game. Also career high if you look at per 36 minutes, per 100 possessions. So it wasn't as if there was some minutes-related outlier here that led to him attempting more threes. It, regardless of whether you look at per game, per possession, or per 36 minutes, it's all highs for this season. So like he did shoot a respectable 36.6%. There were some ebbs and flows, but I just think with how dominant he is at the rim and with his finishing and with his size and his skill, just changing a couple of attempts there. Now, obviously with how much he gets to the free throw line, some of his attempts in the paint or at the rim aren't going to show up because they are leading to him drawing fouls, him getting to the free throw line, and that doesn't show up in your percentage of shots attempted at the rim. So I think it's maybe a little bit more balanced than the numbers indicate. I just think he needs to make a slight tweak. Like, I understand how important the three-point shot is to Luka's game, and when he's making step-back threes, he is entirely unguardable. There's no defense that can stop that. Like, when Luka's step-back is going, there's just absolutely nothing you could do. But I think there were some games where some of the 3-for-12 performances or the 2-for-11, like some of those nights, it could have been closer to 8 or 9 attempts. So again, we're talking about margins here. We're not talking about a big, you know, go from 12 attempts to 6 attempts. I think in general, him being in like the 9 or 10 range is fine, but I think it could have been a little bit lower this year. And I think you saw some of his best performances. It was not just the step back that was going, but it was also his ability to drive, attack off the dribble, get to the rim a ton, get some of those easy layups, score off of Gortat screens. So it's a cat and mouse game with Luka, where the 3-point shot helps unlock his driving ability, helps unlock him getting to the rim and kick out passes or lobs for the big man. If he shifts it 1 to 2 attempts per game, I think he'd be a more efficient scorer. And for those who look at some of the offensive stuff and put guys like Jokic or Shea ahead of him, if he changed his shot profile a little bit, I think he'd be right there with those guys. And of course, with Luka, I know people are going to mention the technicals and the defense. Like, yes, he needs to keep his composure. He should not be racking up 16 plus technicals and getting suspended late in the season. And then defensively, I thought from January on, we saw a real uptick in his defense. He even received some Defensive Player of the Month recognition for March. He was among the players who received votes. So I thought we saw from like January into his eventual injury in early April, we saw a real improvement defensively in his effectiveness. Like, he's always been an effective help defender and his defensive playmaking, but I think even on the ball, he was much better during that portion of the season compared to November and December. So as long as he continues to defend at the level he was at in January and March, I think the Lakers can build a competent defense around him. Next player is LeBron James, and this one is straightforward. It is his catch and shoot 3-point shooting. LeBron's 3-point shot deserted him this season. He shot 32% in the regular season and just 33% in the playoffs. And this comes after LeBron had a couple of his best 3-point shooting seasons over the past couple of seasons. And I focus specifically on catch and shoot attempts because his ability to punish teams as a pick and pop and weak side shooting threat is going to be paramount. And he did it at an incredibly high level the last couple of years. Looking at last season, he shot 42% on catch and shoot threes. The season before, he shot 47.3% on catch and shoot threes. So those are both elite marks. This past season, it was down to 32.8%. So we saw nearly a 10% decrease from the prior season to this past season. That was his lowest mark in the tracking era, which started in 2013-2014. If you look at the playoffs, he shot just 15.4% on catch and shoot threes in these playoffs, which was also a career low for him. The two prior postseasons, he had shot 37.5% on catch and shoots and 46.7%, another elite mark. In that 2023-24 season, he was elite in catch and shoot situations. But we saw just this outlier shooting performance from LeBron. And of course, we have to wonder how much of that had to do with him having the sciatica rear up over the summer. He didn't have his normal offseason routine. He didn't have a training camp. He didn't have a preseason. So as LeBron evaluates his game, he says every media day, there's always an objective for the summer in terms of an area of focus for him. I think the biggest thing is just returning to being the catch and shoot guy that he was, because with LeBron as a pick and pop threat with Luka, as a pick and pop threat with Austin, as a weak side spot up guy, like, just his 3-point shot is such a valuable weapon for him. And when his jumper is falling, I think it takes his offensive game to a different level. I think it takes the Lakers offense overall to a different level. And I think if he remains a Laker and they try to make this situation work between him and Luka and Austin, LeBron being able to play off of the ball and hit threes at least the league average rate, if not back closer to 40% as he was the last couple of years, is going to be important. Next up is Austin Reeves, and this one is a repeat of last year's. My area of improvement for Austin is his 3-point shooting in the playoffs. If you look at this table here, Austin has declined as a 3-point shooter in the playoffs for 3 consecutive seasons. So if you look at the 2023-24 season, he dropped by 20%. In terms of his catch and shoot 3-point shooting. 2 seasons ago, dropped by 5.5%. And then this past season, dropped by nearly 19%. You look at his pull-up 3-point percentage, it has marginally decreased in each postseason. There was a more notable decrease the last couple of postseasons. You look at his catch and shoot attempts, that is more of a mixed bag. A couple postseasons, it's gone up by a little bit. A couple postseasons, it's decreased by a little bit. And then his pull-up 3-point shooting, and I put this in red here just because he's becoming more of a pull-up 3-point shooter, but the percentages outside of that 2023 Western Conference Finals run have not quite been there. Like 36% in 2024, that was that Denver series that LA lost in the first round. 36% you'll take on pull-up threes, but the past two seasons, 28% against Minnesota and then 28.5% against Houston and OKC combined. Him attempting 3.5 threes per game, that's just a little bit too high if he's going to be shooting at that level. So you could focus on catch and shoot, which I think is an important part of him playing off of Luka, playing off of LeBron. And long term, I continue to make this point, but the scoring guards that have worked next to Luka Doncic in terms of playoff success, Kyrie Irving and Jalen Brunson, both shot 40%+ on catch and shoot threes during those postseason runs. So the postseason is naturally a small sample size. Austin only played in 6 playoff games, and there's going to be some level of noise and variance within that. But it is now becoming a trend here where it's been 3 straight postseasons where his 3-point shot has not been the same as it was in the regular season. And it'd be one thing if Austin wasn't a good shooter, but we do see him shoot at a high level in the regular season. As a catch and shoot guy, he's been at 36%+ all 5 seasons. As a pull-up guy, he really popped that second season and then has been at 35% for 3 straight years there, then dipped a bit this past season. And so like he's shown a certain floor as a shooter where most seasons he is at least league average, if not above, but that has dipped in the playoffs. And I think as we project out Austin's role, he needs to be closer to that Kyrie, Jalen Brunson, off-ball threat as a at least high 30s, if not closer to 40% catch and shoot guy. And then the pull-up is going to be an important part of his game. If he is a secondary ball handler, secondary creator, or he's running some units when Luka's on the bench and it's like Austin plus the bench, Austin needs to have that pull-up shooting be more of a weapon. So I think this is part of a larger conversation with Austin and his body and his ability to withstand the rigors of an 82 game season and be fully himself. We have now seen multiple postseasons where he's been banged up to some degree, and everyone's banged up to some degree in the postseason, but we saw last year with the toe injury, and this year he had the oblique injury late in the season, but he was also dealing with several other things. Like, Austin is often arriving at the playoffs in multiple pieces, and I don't know what the solution is here. I don't know if it's reducing his minutes slightly. Like, I think Austin and Luka were overtaxed a bit in the regular season. Both could have played a little bit less. They were among the minutes leaders, especially in that March, which I think partly led to their respective injuries in early April. But aside from maybe reducing the minutes, like I think Austin needs to work on his body this summer, and that needs to be a really big focus for him, is like, how can the Lakers get him going into April with a certain amount of momentum offensively and him still having his legs, him still having his jumper at the level it was at in the regular season. So that to me is the biggest thing. People will point to the defense. He had a rough defensive postseason. If you look at, you know, the biggest on-off discrepancy among the Lakers rotation guys. So that is an area that he can stand to improve in as well. The turnovers were an issue in the postseason, though the Lakers actually had a worse turnover percentage with Austin off the floor than on, because despite some of Austin's struggles, he is a much better ball handler and lead playmaker than a Marcus Smart or a Luke Kennard. So you could point to those things as well. I just think the biggest thing for him is his 3-point shooting. It has fallen off a cliff in the last 3 postseasons. And that is going to be something that if Luka and Austin work long-term, if they win a championship together, if they beat the Spurs or Thunder in a playoff series, if they make a conference finals, if they make a finals, like multiple things are going to have to go the Lakers' way. It's not just Austin shooting, but I think a key ingredient within that is going to have to be Austin shooting at a certain level.
Hey parents, we all know summer break is for fun, but it's also a time when kids can start losing some of the progress they made during the school year. We want them to stay engaged and keep those young minds active. Between camps, vacations, and family time, it can be tough to keep a learning routine going. That's why I want to tell you about IXL. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's an easy way to keep learning going through the summer and helps kids feel confident heading into the next school year. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. And get this, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. That's a huge endorsement. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Next up is Marcus Smart, and this one's a bit more nuanced, but it's refining his decision making. And so I've jokingly said that Marcus is a guy who has looked off Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown in Eastern Conference Finals Game 7s and called his own number. And while that is partly true, his decision making, namely his shot selection and turnovers, can be an issue for Marcus at times. I thought they were a real issue in some of those second quarter stretches that the Lakers struggled in against Houston in that first round series, where there would be the wild passes out of bounds or some of the trying to force things in transition or just taking early shots in the shot clock when the Rockets were starting to gain some momentum and almost trying to shoot your way back into the game. And the thing with Marcus is, like, Marcus is, I think, a defensive savant. He is incredibly cerebral. He's a high IQ basketball player, but there are these random possessions where it feels like he sometimes overestimates his capabilities and views himself more as this like star scoring threat than as a role player. And he's got a little Dylan Brooks in his game. And it's a fine line because Marcus certainly helps more than he hurts. And I also think he balanced things with the Lakers. If you look at some of his career data, like, I think the shot selection was better with the Lakers for the most part, and he played within the hierarchy of things. But I just think he could be a little sharper with his ball handling, with the playmaking, with some of the reads, and being a little bit more selective with his shot selection. Looking at some of the data, like his turnover percentage was at 14% in the regular season, which was 19th percentile. That increased to 20.4% in the playoffs, which was second percentile. So the turnovers were a real issue for him against both Houston and OKC. And then he shot 62% at the rim in the regular season per cleaning the glass, which was his lowest percentage since 2021. And sometimes that would be some wild forays into the paint, into the rim, and him just flinging stuff up there, trying to grift a little bit. He learned some of the dark arts of foul drawing from Luka and Austin. And again, we're nitpicking a bit. We're talking about a pass here or there, a shot here or there, but I think Marcus could stand to refine his overall decision-making, and that would just make him that much more effective and efficient, particularly on the offensive end. Next up is Rui Hachimura, and his area of improvement is consistent motor. And I bring that up because I felt Rui really regressed this past season, at least in the regular season, as both a rebounder and a defender, and more specifically a defensive playmaker. And you look at his numbers, he posted career lows in offensive rebound percentage and defensive rebound percentage. He posted his lowest steal percentage in 4 years. He posted his lowest block percentage in 5 years. And specifically looking at his LA tenure, it was career low marks in LA. And this passed the eye test. Like, this was a big reason why I didn't think Rui could start next to Luka, Austin, and LeBron. We saw that with that starting data. And that's why I was an advocate for Marcus Smart. And that ended up being the right call. So for Rui, I think he's just got to get back to doing some of the things he did earlier in his career. And he should not be on a downward trajectory in terms of his defensive playmaking and his rebounding. And it's not just like it, in theory, or at least on the film, it felt like he made more of an impact in the Houston and OKC series, like that he was better compared to the regular season. But if you look at the numbers, he was marginally better as a defensive playmaker and was actually worse as a rebounder. So looking at it, the block percentage went up from 0.5 to 0.8. The steal percentage went up from 0.9 to 1.1. So the block percentage, you know, slightly below average. Steal percentage, still bad. But then you look at the rebounding, and the rebounding dropped actually. Offensive rebound percentage dropped by 0.4, and defensive rebound percentage dropped by 1.1. So it's just like Rui at this point does not have an above average skill other than his three-point shooting and his mid-range shooting. And I think if you look at the players who are playing in the conference finals and finals at the highest levels at the forward spot, they all check multiple boxes. And Rui right now doesn't check the rebounding box. He doesn't check the defensive box. I don't think he checks the processing box, the playmaking, the ball handling. Like, he's a very one-dimensional player, and he does that at incredibly high level. He is the all-time leader in playoff three-point percentage. He is one of the best mid-range shooters in the league. Like, he does those two things at such a high level that it does offset some of his other limitations to a degree. But I think we are seeing it is difficult to play specialists in the playoffs, especially if you are an offensive specialist. I think you have a little bit more leeway with defensive specialists if you can defend at like an all defense level. So with Rui, I think he's got to get back to doing some of the little things that he did earlier in his career, because I don't think he's got enough versatility within his game to just be like, I'm going to take plays off defensively. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that. And I think on some level, there's some tension between Rui being a four and LeBron and Luka also being fours defensively. And there's just some duplication there where Rui has to play out of position. That's ultimately where I question how he fits if the Lakers are retaining LeBron. I just think there's 48 minutes at the four defensively between LeBron, Luka, and Rui. LeBron and Luka are easily going to combine for 48 plus minutes at that spot. So that means, in some cases, LeBron or Luka is playing out of position as well, but it almost certainly means Rui's playing out of position. So that's just something that the Lakers are going to have to figure out in terms of the roster construction. But I also think Rui needs to play harder, more consistently, and even by his standards, because he was not Dennis Rodman prior to this past season, but he was better than he was this past season, and he needs to get back to that.
Wow. Why have we asked our contractor we found on Angie.com to be our kid's legal guardian? Because he took such good care when redoing our basement that we knew we could trust him to care for our kids, all eight of them, should something happen to us.
Are you my dad now?
No, sorry, I do basements.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Next up is DeAndre Ayton, and his is defense, particularly at the rim, particularly in the paint. If you look at DA's per game defensive numbers, his rebounds and his blocks, they were solid, but that does not paint the full picture here. When you dive into his defensive data, it is concerning. He was 71st in defensive estimated plus minus among centers this season per dunks and threes. Think about that. There are 30 starting centers. There are 30 backup centers. He was a third string level defender per the data this season. He was also 43rd in rim field goal percentage allowed among centers. And this is just centers who played 40 plus games. If you actually just include all centers, he's a bit lower. I think he's in the 60s. He's allowed a 60 plus percent field goal percentage at the rim in three of the past five seasons. And the Lakers allowed the second highest field goal percentage at the rim this past season, in part because of DA's processing limitations and his defensive stance and footwork. He often takes a stance that encourages dribble penetration and is often beat off of the dribble in pick and roll coverages or switches. The Lakers were 4.1 points per 100 possessions worse with DA on the floor defensively, and there were 2 points per 100 possessions worse with DA on the floor defensively in the regular seasons. I think for all the things that people give DA flack for, the hands, the not being able to catch, playing finesse basketball, not trying to get to the foul line, or just not being a consistently high motor player, like, those are all real issues and incredible detractions from his game. I think the defense is the biggest thing, where I just don't think you can have a defense at a certain level if he is your anchor. So that, to me, is the thing that drops him from a starting level big to a backup level big. Is, I mean, he still had an efficient finishing season, was among the league leaders in rim field goal percentage, was among the league leaders in field goal percentage, had an awesome season from an offensive perspective. The defensive rebounding slipped a bit this season, but still was solid. Those are not the issues for me. It is the defensive end where I think there's a real limitation with his ability to process ball handlers, coverages, and just execute that at a high level. So that to me makes him more of a backup than a starter, despite some of the raw per game numbers he puts up. And so if you look at some of the screenshots I have here, this is per cleaning the glass. Per cleaning the glass, the Lakers actually defended the rim better with DA on versus off. They still were a bad rim protection team. But if you look at everything else, the Lakers defended every area of the court worse with DA on. So they were worse defending the mid-range. They were worse defending threes. If you look at their half-court defense, they allowed more points per possession with DA on the floor, more points per play in the half-court, more offensive rebounding. Then if you look at shot frequency, despite them allowing a lower percentage at the rim, they actually had an increase in volume, an increase in rim frequency in terms of opponent attempts with DA on the floor. So teams were getting to the rim at a higher volume when he was out there. And you also look at the effective field goal percentage when he was out there. That was worse as well. So just a lot of the defensive data screams that DeAndre Ayton is more of a backup level big man than a starting level big man. I'm not sure what the solution is here, because at this point, DA is who he is defensively. I think he could watch more film. I think the Lakers could maybe make some schematic adjustments to try to play to some of his strengths a little bit better. But for those reasons, I view DA more as a backup than a starter. And because of that, with that $8.1 million player option that he has, and that decision is his to make, if he does opt in, I think the Lakers either need to structure the roster to where he is a backup moving forward, or they need to try to trade him. Next up is Luke Kennard, and his area of improvement is offensive aggression. Luke's usage percentage dropped from the regular season to the playoffs with the Lakers, which is mind-boggling, because Austin missed four games in that first round series. Luka missed the entire run. Luke was a starter for half of that stretch and then a prominent bench player. And despite that, his usage percentage decreased. And if you actually look at all five of his postseason appearances, Luke's usage percentage has decreased from the regular season to the playoffs in all five of them, despite his minutes either staying largely the same, or in a couple instances, his minutes actually increased and his usage percentage still decreased. This past season with the Lakers was actually his lowest decrease. It was just a 0.4 decrease, which again is still crazy just based on the context of who's available and what LA needed from him offensively. But normally it's been 3.5% or more in terms of a decrease. So we've seen, whether it's Luke passing up opportunities or teams scheming him out, either way, Luke has become far less effective offensively just from a role perspective. And I think a big thing is his reluctance to shoot at times, his reluctance to take difficult shots, and his ability to be schemed out or played off the floor, as Houston and OKC had some degree of success against him in this past postseason. Now, he still has a ton of value because he is one of the best shooters in the league, and he has some of the best gravity in the league as an off-ball threat movement shooter. So there's value within that, but whether it's with the Lakers or his next team, I think Luke needs to be more aggressive, more assertive, and just continue to let it fly the way like he did at times in that game one and that game two against Houston. It wasn't like it was all open shots for Luke Kennard. He was pushing the boundaries of what he could do offensively and letting it fly, even when there was a hand in his face, even when the defense was shifted over toward him. And I think he's got to play more like that. He's got to be a little bit more of a gunner than he normally is. And part of the reason why his percentages are so elite are because he is so selective with his shooting. But if I'm the Lakers or if I'm another team, I would take 2 to 4% worse if the volume increased a bit and you're actually getting more threes, more overall offensive production from him. Next up is Jackson Hayes, and his area of improvement is defensive rebounding. Jackson lineups have been crushed on the defensive glass in back-to-back postseasons, which has made him nearly unplayable. It did make him unplayable in the Minnesota series, and there was a portion of the Houston series where his minutes were reduced. In OKC, he was a bit shaky up until game four. But overall, the team's defensive rebounding dipped by 5.7%. with Jackson on versus off this postseason. And overall, their rebound percentage dropped by 2.7%, which was the second biggest drop off among rotation players behind only Jake LaRavia. And if you look at the state of the Western Conference, there is no great matchup for Jackson Hayes. San Antonio with Wemby and Cornette, OKC with Hartenstein and Chet and Jalen Williams, Minnesota with Gobert and Naz Reid and Julius Randle, Denver with Jokic, Houston with Şengün. Like all those teams have size and length and bruisers and strength and guys that could push Jackson around. And he has been pushed around to varying degrees by each of those teams in matchups this past season or the prior season. So this is an area that Jackson, like, he did bulk up and get stronger this past season. I think there were some strides in his game with a decrease in fouling overall, but a decrease in his illegal screens, a decrease in his fouling on verticality. And Jackson has improved in a multitude of ways. But this to me is the final thing where if he cannot rebound at a certain level and hold down the fort as a defensive rebounder in his minutes at the five, he will be permanently relegated to being a situational backup center on a contender, right? Like there are teams where, sure, if you're a Phoenix or you're some of these lower playoff teams that just need a body, need a backup center, Jackson can step in and be a productive backup for that team. But when we're talking about the highest levels and whether Jackson could play in the biggest moments, like he did that in game four, to his credit. Game four against OKC was arguably his best game of the season and definitely his best game of the playoffs. I think for him, if he is going to be a part of the Lakers' future moving forward, and they are going to rely on him potentially as the primary backup, this needs to be an area that he cleans up. Next is Jake LaRavia, and his area of improvement is his three-point shooting. Jake's three-point shooting fluctuated month to month and really tanked after a career high last season. If you look at his catch and shoot three-point percentage, it went from 37% as a rookie to 35% to 44% last season to just 32% this season. And so if you look at that, like Jake is more of a league average-ish to slightly above league average catch and shoot guy, but he needs to be at least a league average three-point shooter to be a rotation guy on a contender. Like he does other things at a high level that I think people have overlooked because of the shooting concerns, because of the forays into the paint where he'll turn the ball over. But Jake's defense and rebounding and all the little things he does are not at a high enough level to offset the inability to make open looks and to be a catch and shoot threat. So I think Jake doesn't have to get back to 44% like he shot last season between Memphis and Sacramento, but he does need to get back to being at least, I would say, in that 36, 37% range as a shooter. And if he can do that, I think he can be a rotation guy on a playoff team, on a contender, more of a back-end rotation guy, but be in that top 10 or top nine. If he can't, then he becomes unplayable as he was in the OKC series.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair has got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level, fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Next is Jared Vanderbilt. This is a repeat from last season. It's really a repeat of the last few seasons. It's his rim finishing and being more of a consistent offensive threat in general, because Vando will have these random games where he connects on a lob, he gets a couple putbacks, he hits a corner three, and all of a sudden you look up, he's got 8 points, 9 points, 11 points, whatever it is. But those performances are few and far between. Vando continues to be one of the least effective offensive threats in the league. And when you look at his effective field goal percentage, he is below average, which, remember, like, this is a guy who is often taking wide open threes or wide open layups or, you know, maybe putbacks, but like his shot profile is at the rim and in the corners. He is taking the most efficient shots in the NBA, and he is still a below average finisher and shooter overall. So the fact that he's in that 30 to 40th percentile as an effective field goal guy on his shot profile is concerning, because he should be, like, Vando should be one of the more efficient guys. Like, you know, putting the 3-point shooting aside, in terms of his 2-point percentage, in terms of his finishing at the rim, that should be much better than it is. And you look at it, Like the 3-point percentage in the corner actually decreased this season. It felt like it increased because he did make more of them from a volume perspective, but he actually shot his lowest percentage from the corners since the 2021-22 season. He shot just 30% on corner threes this season. He shot 38% on corner threes last season and 32% the two prior seasons. So his 3-point percentage has continued to decrease. I will give him credit because he was a more willing 3-point shooter this year. And so maybe that led to the decrease in percentage, but the progress that the Lakers touted at the beginning of the season was short-lived with him. And if you look at the rim field goal percentage, like it went up slightly, but you know, by 2% this past season. But while he's been in LA, ranging between 62% and 67% is just far too low for a player who is functionally a center on offense. And if Vando is going to be a five on offense and is going to play in some of these small ball looks or be a backup five longer term, at least from like an offensive perspective, he needs to be a much better finisher and much more of an offensive threat. So in general, like at this point, I've made this point the last couple of years, like I don't expect Vando to sniff league average 3-point shooting. I just don't think that's in the cards for him, but he needs to be better with catching and finishing and putbacks and just be more of a threat around the paint and around the rim. And he had some flashes this past season, but he has not been able to do that consistently for multiple years now. And I just think his offensive game has trended to the point where it's very difficult to play him at the highest levels. Next is Adu Firo. And for him, it is his finishing and scoring in the paint. So the low hanging fruit with Adu is his 3-point shooting and his jumper. And that area needs to develop as well. But he did not finish well this season, depending on the numbers you look at. So per Basketball Reference, which looks at, considers the rim as 3 feet and in, he shot 70.6% and then just 27% on shots between 3 to 10 feet. He didn't attempt any long twos, only attempted threes and shots within 10 feet. But per Cleaning the Glass, he shot 54% at the rim, which Cleaning the Glass calculates it as 4 feet. So that extra foot dropped him from 70.6% to 54%. But 4 feet, again, is still pretty close to the basket. So we saw at the rim, I think with the dunking, some of the putbacks, like Adu is a high-level finisher. But once he gets a little bit out directly from the rim, and again, if you want to consider the rim 4 feet, 54% is not a good mark. Adu needs to improve there. So whether it's like floaters or hooks or whatnot, I think his paint scoring needs to be an area that he improves in, because similar to Vando, like the 3-point shot might come at some point. I don't think that's something that the Lakers need to necessarily bank on, but him being an actual scoring and paint threat consistently is going to be one of the pathways to him getting minutes, because we know the defense, the athleticism, the rebounding, the motor, like all those things are already NBA level and rotation worthy. It's his processing and also just how raw he is offensively. If he can refine that a bit, I think he will be potentially a rotation player as soon as next season. But I just think in general, he needs to get better as a finisher and being a threat outside of dunking the ball or layups, right? A little bit more in that 4 to 10 foot range. If he can develop some moves and counters, it just be more effective in that area, I think, because again, if we want to consider the rim just the 3 feet and say 71%, that's awesome. The 27% between 3 and 10 feet, like that's got to be much better. And then final one is Bronny James, and his area of improvement is defensive playmaking. And this is actually a thing that Bronny has done well in his stints as a rotation guy that I think he could do even better and will be his pathway to potentially becoming a rotation player at some point in the future. Bronny has shown early promise as a defensive playmaking guard. If you look at his block percentage, you look at his steal percentage, he has been a defensive playmaker. And I think if we project out into the future, what does Bronny as a rotation guy look like? Like what is the fully formed, actualized version of Bronny? To me, it's a defensive pest in that Davion Mitchell, Jamal Shedd mold, who can be a point of attack guy and play passing lanes and leverage his athleticism. And then offensively, be more of a secondary playmaker, creator. Like I don't think he'll ever be a primary ball handler or shot creator, even in like a bench role, but
can he shoot at a certain level, make catch and shoot threes? And then if he needs to initiate a second side action, or we saw he flashed some playmaking skills, some high level passing reads, you know, doing a little bit of that. So the offensive side remains a work in progress for him, and he's got to improve as a finisher, as a shooter, decision making. I think there's a lot of room for improvement offensively. But the thing to me that he has shown already that is the highest upside within his potential, within his skill set, to me, is the defensive side. And if he can continue to maintain his defensive playmaking and in some of the defense he's shown in a larger sample size, that to me is his pathway to potentially becoming a rotation player. So that would be my focus if I am Bronny, is setting the tone on the defensive end and being so good defensively that it's difficult to take you off of the floor. But that'll do it for today's episode. Thank you all so much for watching and listening. For those watching on YouTube, please be sure to hit that subscribe button, turn on channel notifications, and like and comment on this video. And for those listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice, please be sure to follow, download, and leave a 5-star review. I'll be back later in the week. I'll talk to you then.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.